Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph with the new Perek. The new Perek transitions from the Mumim that we saw in the previous Perek of the Beima to here the Mumim of Adam. They're both found in Parshat Emor. In Parshat Emor it says, Ki kol asher bo mum lo yikrav. Any individual who has a mum cannot do service in the Mikdash. And here is the definition of someone who has a mum. Ish, iver, o piseach, o charum, o sarua. O ish, asher yivo shever rogel, o shever yad. O gibain, o dak, o tevalul, be'eno. O garav, o yalefet, o meroach hashech. Kol ish, asher bo mum, izeh aron hakoen, lo yigash lakriv et ishe Hashem, mum bo. Lechem elokav, lo yigash lakriv. So here you have a list of mumim that are associated with the Adam. The Gemara here is going to discuss these different mumim, as well as additional mumim that aren't mentioned particularly in the Torah. We'll see today what those additions are. Now, that is somewhat in contrast to that which is written by the Behema later on in the Perek, where it says with regards to the Behema, Averet, O Shavur, O Charutz, O Yabelet, O Garav, O Yalefet, Lo Takriv El Hashem, Vishay Lo Titnu Mehem O Mizbeach La Hashem, Veshor, Veseh, Saruah, Vekalut, Nedavata, Seoto, the Neder, Lo Yeretze, Umauch, Vekatut, Venatuk, Vekharut, Lo Takriv El Hashem, Ubarzachem, Lo Tasu. So here again, you have a list of items that are disqualifying with regards to a Behema, and the Gemara is going to have to address is, what is the difference in the lists? Obviously, some of the differences you can assign to the difference between human beings and animals. But some of the things should be overlapping or should apply in both cases. And if you have to ask, why does it apply by an animal or by a human being? Or maybe there is some sort of cross-pollinization between the two. That's going to be part of the discussion today. Just to add to this, that the Parshat Re'eh, with regards to the Bechor, over there we saw earlier, it says, Piseach Ve'iver. Those are also mumim that are mentioned by the Bechor. And the Gemara later on will say, why do I need mumim to be mentioned by Adam, by Kodoshim, and then by Bechor? We have three different times in the Torah that it mentions the fact that those items that have mumim are disqualified. Mumim elu, ben kvuim, ben ovrim, poslim ba'adam. So mumim elu means all those things we mentioned in the previous perek. So that which is mentioned by the Bechor are also posel a kohen, to do avodah. And that's whether they are permanent or whether they are temporary. If they're permanent, then they're permanently excluded from doing avodah. If they're temporary, then they're temporarily suspended from doing the avodah while they have the mum. Once it resolves, they can go back to doing avodah. The yeter alehen. Now, in addition to those that we saw by the Behema, the Adam has these additional mumim that were not mentioned in the previous perek. And then the Mishnah is going to have a list of items that we will get into in the Gemara. The Gemara will go through each one of them and explain what they are. Hakilon, Valiftan, Vamakvan, Visharosho Shakut, Utskifat, Ubale Chatarot, which seems to be hunchback or something to do with the back. Avihuda Makshir, Vachamim Poslim. So that issue with regards to the hunchback or the back, Avihuda thinks is not a problem, whereas the Chachamim think it is. Hakireach Pasul, one who is bald is pasul. Ezu kireach. What is a kireach? Ko she'en lo shita shel se'ar mukefet mi ozen li ozen. As if he doesn't have hair that runs from one ear to the other ear. Im yesh lo, if he does have it, hareze kasher. Then that individual is kasher. The Gemara will discuss what exactly is the disqualification over here. It can't be that just the person who's balding is going to be disqualified because that's a natural phenomenon. Not really a mum in an individual. So it has to be something here that is unusual or something that's out of the ordinary in order for it to be classified as a mum, which is what the Gemara will discuss. Gemara says, Amai, why are these items psulim ve adam? Vaika yabelet alotebo right of adam. You have yabelet, which is never mentioned in the list of mumim for adam, yet it is a psul or a mum that is mentioned in the previous parak. And we're now saying that it applies to Adam. Vitu, Dak, Vitavlul. Also these that are mentioned, that are not mentioned by the animal, only by people. And yet we say that it's a Mumer, a Psul, by Behemot. So the Gemara's question is, as we noted before, is that we have these Mumim that are mentioned. Over here you have your belet that is mentioned by Behemah that we're saying applies to Adam because of Mumim Elu. Everything in the previous parak applies in this parak, yet that's not mentioned explicitly by Adam. And vice versa, you have Dak and Tivalul, which are mentioned in the Psukim by Adam, but they're not mentioned by the Behemah. And yet we still said them or mentioned them in the previous parak with regards to the Behemah. So the answer to that is Milaf Yalfe Mihadodi, that we learn them one from the other. There's this cross-pollinization between Adam and Behemah. Now, obviously, there are mumim, as Rashi says, that you don't have to ask about or don't make sense to carry over from the Behemah to the Adam. So, for instance, Rashi brings the chutin, the gums or the molars that are missing, or zanav ha'egel, or the tail of a calf, that how far it has to be or how long it has to be. Those are not mumim that you would classify as mumim that would be shayach or relevant to an Adam. And they're included mikol mumra. The court says kol mumra, and that includes all of these items. But certain of these items that are mentioned by Adam and not behema, so then why should they be psulim behema if they're not explicitly mentioned by behema? That's the question that's being posed by the Gemara. And the Gemara's answer is Milef Yalfe Ma'adodi, that they are learnt one from the other. Titania, Ba'adam lo nemar bo yabelet. By Adam, it never mentions the yabelet. Bebeima lo nemar dak tivalu. And it doesn't mention these issues with the eyes with regards to Behema. Minayin litein et amur shel zeh bezeh, et amur shel zeh bezeh. How do I know to cross-pollinate the two lists and say whatever applies to Adam applies to Behema, whatever applies to Behema applies to Adam, assuming that it's relevant. Tamalomar, garav, garav, yalefet, yalefet. So that comes from a gzeira shava. Gzeira shava, we have both garav and yalefet mentioned both by Adam and by Behema, and that creates a gzeira shava. Gemara says, mufne. The gzeira shava must be built on extraneous words. Dilo mufne, ika the mifrach. If it's not built on these extraneous words, you could undermine the gzeirah shava. This goes to a principle which is, gzeirah shava can be questioned based on a logical argument. But then we have a rule that if it's mufne, ein mishivin. Which means that if the words are extraneous in the gzeirah shava, we don't challenge it logically. There are 2 day old with regards to this, whether it has to be mufne mitzad achad, it only has to have an extraneous word on one side of the gzeirah shava, or mufne mishnei tzadim. Or does it have to have both words, meaning both the source and the resultant limud, both have to be extraneous words in order for it to be ein mishivin, that we don't challenge it logically. The Gemara here is saying that this gzeir shava must have extraneous wording in it, because otherwise we could challenge the gzeir shava from the following logical argument. Igle mifrach, adami beima lo yalif, a person should not be learned from beima, so can he atzma kreva de gabei mizbeach? The Behema might have a higher threshold or stricter rules because it itself is going on the Mizbeach. The Adam is just in service there. He's not actually going on the Mizbeach. So maybe a Behema has a higher standard. Behema me Adam lo yalfa. And you can't learn a Behema from a human being. Shukin yidraba b'mitzvot. Human beings are exactly that. They're human beings and therefore they have mitzvot. They have a higher level of kedusha in their performance of mitzvot. So you would not then be able to extrapolate from one to the other. Elaim Kain, it's mufne and allows the gzeir shava to take place. La'ai afnui mifne. Which word is extraneous? Or what is extraneous over here? It says, lichtov rachmana yalefet. If the Torah had just written the word yalefet, velo bayi garab. And then you wouldn't need garab to be mentioned over there. Va'ana amina. And I would have been able to extrapolate and say, my yalefet, delomilisa, by a yalefet, which is not disgusting, is not something that is an eyesore, have a muma. The Torah classifies that as a mum, garav, demais, loko shekain, then garav, which is disgusting, which is unappealing to look at, then certainly that should be problematic. So as Rashi explains over here, that garav is mais, mi yalefet. The garav is more disgusting or more unappealing than a yalefet. The kashehu kecheres. This is going back to what we saw in the previous tapim with regards to garav, that there are 3 different types of garav, right? 3 different types of these whether they're warts, blisters, or boils that are on the individual, they come in different forms. There are those that are moist through and through, there are those that are dry through and through, and there are those that are dry on the inside, moist on the outside. And here Rashi is saying that the garab they're referencing to here is the cheres, the one that is dry through and through. Because it's dry, umishakeya babasar voseh harizin, it causes depressions or cuts and cracking of the skin and makes charitzim. It makes these ditches along the skin of the individual. So there's something that is really unappealing to look at. It's something that's disgusting. You could have argued that the disgusting part might be the moisture. If it has moisture, it has pus, has other things that are involved with it. That might also be something that's unappealing. But either way, the Gemara is saying that if you have a yabelet, you have some sort of growth, and that's already disqualified, then a garav, that's either a more extreme type of growth, either because of its dryness or because of its moistness, that would have been obvious that it is a mum. So then, garav, dichtiv rachmana lomali. So then, why did the Torah bother to write garav if it was a simple extrapolation from yalefet, lafnuye, to be extraneous and allow you to learn the gzeirah shavah? Tosafot just makes an interesting note that we used the word garav in the previous parak to teach us things, including Rava, who says that the word garav comes to teach you that a charitz b'makom basar is not considered to be a mum. So then how could it be mufne if we have a drasha associated with it? Tosafot has an interesting chiddush where he says that came into the drasha lo mitukma garav legufe, meaning it's not used because of the word garav itself, elamed a charitz b'makom basar, but to teach you something else, then it's still classified as being mufne. And therefore he says that if you're using the word garav, not for literally garav, but to teach you something else, like here, that a charitz b'makom basar is not considered to be a mum, then that doesn't take away from the aspect of it being mufne, that the word garav was unnecessary, and it's available for the gzeir shava, because the limo that derives from it is not about garav inherently, it's a generic statement about charitzim by mumim.
It says, v'lichtivinu rachmana kulu bechad.
Why doesn't the Torah write all the mumim, either by Adam or by Beima? And then, garav yalefet hacha b'hacha. And then write the words garav and yalefet by both of them. And that way you'd have the gzeirah shavah, the lufu mehadodi. And then you'd be able to learn one from the other. In essence, what the Gemara is asking is, why do we have two different lists? We have a list by Adam, we have a list by Beima. There is some overlap between them, and there's some things that do not overlap. Why don't you just make it simple? Write the list all by either Adam or by Beima. And then have garav and yalefet in both of them. And then you can make the gzeirah shavah. And I will tell you, whatever's true of the big list is also true in the other one that just has garav v'yalefet. Where it says, ahai, or behai likatev, rachmana. Which one of them do you want to write it in? Ikatav ba'adam, if you only wrote the whole list by Adam, avamino, kola pasul ba'adam, pasul be'beima. That would mean that anything that is pasul by Adam would be relevant by be'ima. But there's certain mumim that are unique to Behema that are not going to be written in this list of Adam. For instance, kalut, which is rounded hooves, not relevant by people, but obviously relevant by Behema. Bichutin, and the gums, the issues with gums or teeth, molars that we mentioned by Behema, those are more relevant by the Behema because the Behema opens its mouth wide. Those are considered to be mumim. By human beings, their mouth isn't as widely open and therefore there's less of an issue. There might be other issues we're going to see later on that will disqualify the kohen for the same mum, but for different reasons. But as a mum inherently, it's not relevant by human beings. So they're delenu ba'adam. They don't have application by adam. Be'beima nami lo lupaslu. And therefore, the be'ima will not also be disqualified by those items. So then, v'lichto v'rachmano kulo be'beima. So then, why don't you write everything by the be'ima? Havamina. Once again, I would have thought, kol de basul be'beima, basul ba'adam. Anything that's disqualified by the be'ima will also be disqualified by the adam. Gibein v'charum. What about gibein and charum? Deleitnu be'beima, that are not relevant by the be'ima. I'm not translating them only because the Gemara in the upcoming Gemara is going to explain what a gibein is and what a charum is at the end of today's daf. But those are mumim that are uniquely associated with human beings, either dealing with the eyebrows, dealing with the shape of the face, that don't have relevance by Behema. Ba'adam nami lo lipaslu. Therefore, if we wrote the whole list by Behema, they should also then not be relevant for Adam as well. So it says, let's make this suggestion. So let the Torah write the entire list by one of them. And those things that are not relevant by Adam, but are relevant by Behemah, fill it in. So then the ones that are not relevant for Behemah, write by Adam. And then you have Garav and Lefet in both places. And then you'll cross-pollinate the lists. So the new suggestion is, the ones that are uniquely associated with Behemah, write by Behemah. The ones that are uniquely associated with Adam, write by Adam. Garav and Yalefet by both of them to create the Gzer Shavah. The remainder of the list should be either all by Adam or all by Behemah. Ella, that can't be the situation. Kedetana, the Bei Rabbi Shmuel. So Tana Bei Rabbi Shmuel rejects all of this thought process as to the logic of why the Torah did something. In essence, what the Gemara is asking is, what's the logic of the listing that the Torah makes? If you're going to cross-pollinate the two lists anyway, why separate the lists? Well, because some are relevant by Adam, some are relevant by Behemah. So then keep those separate. The remainder of the items, you could write in one list and then have them cross-pollinate. Why does the Torah have a mishmash of lists here by Adam, by Behemah? What is the driving force behind the reason that they're placed in each location? So Gemara is trying to look for a logic for that or try to give some sort of reasonable explanation for it. The answer of the Gemara is, you're not going to find that. And that is because of Tana de Beit Rabbi Shmuel. The Tana Rabbi Shmuel, ko parsha shenemra v'nishneit. Anytime you have a parsha in the Torah that is repeated, lo nishneit el b'shvil dvar shenitchadesh ba. When it repeats itself, it can be repeated in its entirety just for the one item that is added in that situation. Or in essence, what it's saying is that duplication in the Torah is not a question. The Torah many times says the same thing over more than once. And even though it's saying it more than once, and you could have saved yourself all the trouble and just referenced back to it or consolidated the list, that's not the way the Torah works. The Torah writes whatever it wants. And sometimes it does duplication just for the one additional item that it mentions. So by Adam or by Behemah, it might list everything over again in both of them. And yet do that simply for the two items that are added by Adam, Gibein v'charum, or by Behemah, the Kalut and the Chutin. So the Torah will write excess or extraneous material, extraneous lists, because it's only focused on the additional items that are being added. Or again, in essence, what Tana de Beit Shmuel is, this is not the type of question you can ask. You can't challenge the Torah's presentation of the material. You can only say that the Torah did it because there is information that wasn't found in the other list, wasn't found in the other section. Amar Rava, Lama le dichtiv Rachmana mum be'adam, mum be'kodoshim, mum be'bechor. Why is it that we have three different lists of mumim? You have it by Adam, by Behemah, and by Bechor. So Rava, in other words, is asking the same question again, which is, why have multiple lists? So the Gemara tried logically to figure out why we have those lists. It couldn't prove anything. And therefore it said, just go to Tana de Beit Rabbi Shmuel, which says that sometimes there is duplication in the Torah. Rava asks, why have duplication? You could just extrapolate one to the other. And so then why bother having the lists at all? So it's asking the question from a different perspective. Just why can't you have one list and then learn one from the other? Not why there are multiple lists, or what's included in which list. Before the Gemara took it for granted that all the lists should exist. Just question what should be contained in the list. Rav is now questioning fundamentally, why do you have multiple lists at all? Why mention anything by any of them? So the Gemara says, Tzricha, we need all of them. Dika dav Rachmana mum ba'adam. If it only mentioned by Adam, we would not be able to extend that to Kodoshim and to Bechor. Shekeini drabe b'mitzvot. Because human beings are unique. They have the mitzvot, they're Kodoshim. There's a unique status to human beings that's differentiated from animals. And just because something's a mum by a human being doesn't mean that you can extrapolate that to behemot. Adam mi bechor lo ati. Adam, you can't learn out of bechor. Shekeinu atzmo karev legabei mizbech. Because it goes on the mizbech as opposed to Adam. Kodoshim mi bechor lo ati. Kodoshim can't be learned from bechor. Shekein kedushato mi rechem. Because the bechor has kedusha from the birth, whereas Kodoshim only gained that Kedusha later on. Adam mi Kodoshim, Loati. You can't learn Adam from Kodeshim, Shekein Hein Atzman Krevim. Because Kodeshim go to Mizbeach, Adam doesn't. Bechor mi Kodeshim Loati, Shekein Kedushetao Mirubeh. And a Bechor can't be learned from Kodeshim, because Kodeshim have a higher level of Kedusha. The way Rashi expresses over here is that they have multiple different types of korbanot. A Bechor is a unique korban that's associated with Zecharim, Behemot, firstborn, whereas Kodeshim have Chatot, Hashamot, Olot, Shlamim, all of these different Kedushot that are associated with them. I think you could also speak about Kedushato Mirubah, which is that you have Kodeshim Kalim and Kodeshe Kodeshim. Meaning that there's different levels of Kedusha by Kodeshim, whereas Bechor is Kodeshim Kalim and even the lowest level of Kodeshim Kalim. So Chad Mechada Lo Atyo. So we're not successful learning one from the other. Teite chada mitarte. Write it in two of them, and then extrapolate that to the third. Mehe teite. Which one of them do you want to learn out from? Lo tichtov rachmana v'bechor. So leave out bechor, v'teite mehanach. And learn it out from Adam and Kodoshim. Malahanach, shekein kedushata meruba. That they have higher level kedusha. Adam because of mitzvot. The other korbanot, because either they have a higher level of kedusha, or they have multiple types of korbanot. V'noagim v'pshutim. And they also apply to non-firstborn animals, or non-firstborn human beings are affected by these. So you can't learn Bechor from these two. Lo diktov b'kodashim. So let's skip Kodashim and take the Mianach and learn it out of Adam and Bechor. Malhanach shekin kedushatan me'alein. They both have inherent kedusha. Adam or Kohen, the kedusha is inherent from birth, and so is the Bechor, a kedusha that is from birth. That's not true by Kodashim. Lo lichtov Adam. You want to leave out Adam and learn it from Behem Kodeshim and Bechor. V'teite mihanach and learn from them. Malanach shekein ein atzman krevim. Mizbeach. They both go on the Mizbeach. The Adam doesn't go on the Mizbeach. Tzrichei. Therefore I need all three of these. I need to mention it by Adam. I need to mention it by Bechor. And I need to mention it by Kodeshim. And then Tosafot then starts to question Rava's logic now says, that if we learn certain mumim, or certain rules about mumim from one of them, that means that you can't then apply it to the other one. So for instance, in the beginning of the previous perek, we learned that by Bechor, when it says Pisach v'Iver, that gave us the definition of what is a mum. It has to be a davar shebegalui, and it has to be a davar that is permanent, and it has to be something that is possibly, which the Gemara rejected later on, but it says butal mimalachto, which was the third qualification. So you had these qualifications that we learned out either from the Klal Prat Uchlal or from the Riboy Omiyut. We learned out the rules of what is classified as a mum. And we learned that out from Bechor. Well then, how do I take that from Bechor now and move it over to Adam and Behema as the definition of a mum? You just told me that you can't do that. The logic dictates that it wouldn't work and I have to write them separately. So Tosafot comes to the conclusion and says, hold the gully gully. Once it's been revealed, once it's been opened up, then the logical issue goes away. Had I only written it, say for instance, by Bechor, I would say I can't extrapolate from Bechor to Adam, or I can't extrapolate from Bechor to Kodoshim, because of the logic over here. Bechor has Kedusha Me'atzmo, and Bechor has Karev Agave Mizbeach, which is not true for the Adam. So I can't learn Kodoshim and Adam from Bechor. But now, once the Torah already indicates that Bumim do apply to Adam, and they do apply to Kodoshim, that already says that that logic is not the reason. Because if that was the reason, then you wouldn't have had it be applicable by there. Once the Torah shows you it is applicable, hold the gully gully. Once it says that Mumim applied to Adam, Mumim applied to Kodeshim, and Mumim applied to Bechor, now that I've established that fact, then I can now take the information I know by Bechor and apply it to Adam, apply it to Behemah. So that is a way that Tosafot says we overcome this logical problem, is to say that once we've already developed or come to the conclusion that all of them have issues with mumim, and then I have a definition of a mum in one place, I can use that definition and then apply it to the other places because mumim play across the board that we've already established. All right, now the Gemara says, Yeter Aleihem Adam. Adam has mumim that exceed the mumim of Behema. That's how our parak begins. All the things from Behema apply here. And yet there Aleihem. Adam has beyond that these additional items. Minane mile. How do I know that Adam has these additional items? Where do they come from? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Damakra. Kol ish asher bo mum mizera Aaron. Says any individual who has a mum from the descendants of Aaron, from the Kohanim, they are disqualified. And the Gemara learns about this, ish shishaveh bizarot shel Aaron. When it says ish, it means that everybody needs to look the same. Obviously it doesn't mean exactly the same, but it means that everybody has to look normal. If you have something that makes you extraordinary or abnormal, then you're not included in ish shishaveh bizarot shel Aaron. That you are not then equal or on a level playing field with everybody else from the Zer Aaron. The Gemara in the previous parak brought this from a different pasuk of ish mizer Aaron, ish shaveh zero shel Aaron. We mentioned over there that Rishonim point out that that's probably not the right pasuk. It's just quoting it either because it has the word ish in it or the word ish appears multiple times in the parak there, but it's just a reference to the pasuk over here, which is the real source. And this is the source for the fact that they have to be shaveh Zarot shel Aaron, that everybody has to be similar in nature without any mumim. Ma ika ben muma l'sheinu shaveh b'zarot shel Aaron. Well then, now you've told me that there are two types of things that can disqualify you. You can be disqualified because you have a mum, and you can be disqualified because you're not shaveh b'zarot shel Aaron. What's the difference between them? If they're both disqualified, why are they separated? What's the distinction between them? Ika mishum achulei avodah. The impact is whether you profane the avodah that's done. A kohen that serves in the mikdash, who has a mum, and is disqualified from serving there, if he goes and does avodah, his avodah is profane. It doesn't work. It's actually as if nothing was done, if it was done improperly. But on the other hand, she'enu shaveh shalaro shalarom will not have that impact. Muma mechil avodah. If you have a mum, then the avodah is profaned. Dichtiv mumbo velo yichalel. Because the pasuk says that he has a mum and he will not profane it, meaning that if he has a mum in him, then he will profane that avodah. She'enu shaveh b'zarot shel Aaron lo meichel avodah, doesn't have that impact. Now, ma'ika ben she'enu shaveh b'zarot shel Aaron umishum marit ayin. What's the difference between she'enu shaveh b'zarot shel Aaron and appearance? Ika benayu asay. The difference between them is an asay. So over here, the Gemara creates basically three categories of disqualifications for a Kohen, for an Adam. One of them is Mum, which is what we discussed in the previous parak with Behema, and those are items that are mentioned in the Torah in the list of Mumim that are disqualifying. In addition to that, we have items that are Ish Mizer Aaron, those things that are Sheveh Mizerot Shel Aaron, things that are considered to be normal, that a person has to look normal. They can't have these unusual features to them. And then there's a third category, which is Marat Ayin. Not the classic type of Marat Ayin, but Marat Ayin is something that is unappealing. It's an eyesore to look at. It's something that people would be somewhat taken aback if they saw it. So it's not something that is necessarily Shaveh B'Zarot Shel Aaron. It's not something that is a big enough problem that we would consider it to be an abnormality that is excluded because of the Zarot Shel Aaron. On the other hand, it's something that is striking in its lack of appeal or its disgustingness that we would then say that person is disqualified for that reason. So now the Gemara wants to know the differentiation in those items. It seems to be that at least the first two are Mido Oraita. The third one we'll have to discuss where the Marat Ayin comes from. So what's the difference between them? The Gemara says, the first difference is that by a mum, or a full-fledged mum, there you're disqualified, and not only are you disqualified, if you do avodah, when you are disqualified, that avodah will be profaned and will not be accepted at all. Because it says, because he may not do avodah, because, because if they do such avodah, they will profane my mikdash, they will profane the avodah. So that is the chilul that we're speaking about. Now, the pasuk that's mentioned here, which is, kol ish asher bo mum mizer Aaron, hakohen lo yigash lakriv yishel Hashem, mum bo et lechem elokav lo yigash lakriv. So over there, kol ish asher bo mum mizer Aaron, that's a more generic statement. It's not just the things that are enumerated here, it's a generic statement about person that's mizer Aaron, that they have to have equal or look normal or be like Aaron, they have to be lacking in certain mumim. The implications, as Rashi says, ta'achimashma, ha'shaveh mizer Aaron, ha'vei kohen. someone who is equated or equal to the Zer Aron is a Kohen via vote, and he can do avoda. She'eino shaveh, if he's not shaveh, lo yavod. He should not do the avoda. V'lav abba michlal asay, and a lav that comes from an asay is an asay. It's a little strange, only because the pasuk seems to say it explicitly, which is lo yigash, right? La'kriv et yishay Hashem mumbo lechvakav lo yigash la'kriv. So it's a little strange that you have lavim here, but it seems to be that the Gemara is looking at this not from the disqualification of doing the avoda, but rather his losing shem aron or zer aron. He's somewhat demoted as a kohen because of this mum. And that comes from the earlier part of the pasuk, similar to what happens when a kohen doesn't wear big day kuhuna. We say in the Gemara that bizman shebig day malehem kunatam alehem. When they're wearing the big day kuhuna, then they are kohenim. Well, that means if they're not wearing the big adim, they're not kohenim. The answer is yes. Status of being a kohen is obviously something that is by birthright, and so you're a kohen no matter what. But there is a certain elevation of kedushat kohen that is attained when you do things in a certain manner. For instance, when you wear the big day kuhuna, you've now gained that elevated status, not just being a kohen by birthright, but a kohen that's ready to do avoda. And if you don't wear those clothes, you're disqualified. You're not a kohen for avoda. And so I think the Gemara is saying the same thing here with regards to the mumim, which is that if you're a kohen by birthright, but if you have one of these mumim, then you're not really a kohen for avoda. And that's the mitzvah to say that they're speaking about here. In order to be a kohen that's ready to do avoda, that's qualified to do avoda, you need to be mizer aron. And then the asay or isra asay that derives from that is, if you don't, then you don't qualify as a kohen that can do avoda. So now that gives you a mitzvah to say that you're violating if you do avoda. So now you have mechel avoda if you have a mum. If you have a problem of zer aron, then you have an isra asay. And then you have marat ayin, which is just something that is disgusting or unappealing to look at. That's already not mechel avoda. It's not an isra asay. It is something where either the chachamim or the Torah is giving to us a little more latitude to decide that certain things are not within the purview of what would be considered normal, and therefore they're excluded, but they're not an isra asay. They're not mechel avoda. So those are the three different levels. Right now, the Gemara says kilon. It's going back to our Mishnah, where it listed a number of items that are problematic. And those items, it wants to give you the description of them. Kilon is the dami reshi la'achla. His head looks like the cover of a barrel. So just like the cover of a barrel is wide at the bottom, at the base, and then narrows to a point at the top, so too, someone's head, which has the appearance of being wider at the bottom and then narrowing to a point at the top, that's a mum. Lifta, which was the next item mentioned in our Mishnah, is dami reshe begad galida de lifta. His head is like the head of a turnip, where it's the other way around. And as opposed to the case of kilon, where it's wide at the base, narrow at the top, a turnip's the other way around, where it's wider at the top, narrower at the base. So that's also a mum. Tana vitzavaro omeid be'emtza rosho. So you have a breita here, which it's not clear whether the breita is describing another problem of lifta, or what lifta means, or is the breita giving us another mum that just has to be associated with these two mimim, which is vitzavaro omeid be'emtza rosho, as opposed to the normal situation in which the back of your neck up through the back of the skull is flush with your back. This individual has their head centered on their neck, which means that it protrudes out in the back, just like your face protrudes out in the front. So that's a centered head, rather than a skewed head, where we're normally flush in the back and extended out in the front. Makvan. So that's another one that was mentioned in our Mishnah, which is the dummy reshela makvan. His head looks like either a mallet or a sledgehammer. That's a definition of a makvan. Rashi says, le kardom, sha'orfo agol v'katsar v'rochav. That the back of his head is very narrow and rounded. Just like that, the shape of the mallet or the sledgehammer. Whereas the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it more traditionally like a hammer, where it's narrow and then it sticks out. He says his forehead and the back of his head stick out or protrude like a hammer. Like on the narrow handle and then the top of the hammer, which protrudes in both directions at the top. So too, this person, if you look from the front, their sides of their head look like they're normal and proportional, but the front and the back are protruding out like that of a hammer. What's interesting about this statement is that in the academic circles that discuss the Chashmonaim from Chanukah, they try to figure out where the name Chashmonaim or Maccabim came from. And what is the source for the fact that they were called these names? Both of them are somewhat problematic. It's not clear why they're called Chashmonaim. Both of the names are later names, or names that were given much later. And the question is, was that a real name? Is it made up? Is it a problem in translation? So, for instance, Chashmonaim, people say that they came from Chashmonaim, but it's probably the other way around. Chashmonaim, or Modi'in, is the place that they lived and gained their names from the Chashmonaim. So the question is, what is the source for that? Whether it came from the Chashmon, which was a family or location during Bayit Sheni, during the return by the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, where Kohanim had lived, or was families of Kohanim in Chashmon, maybe that's the source for it. There are other speculations. The Maccabim is most famous because of what Josephus said about the Maccabim, which is Maccabim is Roshei Tevot, Mi Kamocha Be'elim Hashem, who is like you, God, in the Great Ones. But it's in all likelihood, that's probably not the case, because we never see it mentioned before. It's not mentioned in the Sefer Chashmonaim itself. And it's only mentioned by Josephus, and seems to be speculation as to the source. So because of that, the historians who deal with this try to look for other reasons. One of the suggestions that is brought is Makvan. Is this word right here, based on the Gemara here, that the Maccabim, the story or the name of Maccabim comes from this Makvan over here. And that could be a description of Yehuda HaMaccabi. It could be for one of two reasons. It could be Yehuda Maccabi because he was Makev, the Oyev. He used to deal with the enemy by basically putting a sledgehammer or a mallet on them. He used to smash the enemies. And therefore he got the nickname Yehuda HaMaccabi from the word Makvan, which is mentioned here. Or in the Gemara we find, and in their time we find many times, that people were described by features. Because they had no surnames, they only had their given names, their first names. Many times you have people that are called by the same name, how do you differentiate them? So obviously you say Ben something, so maybe that helps a little bit, but without surnames it was sometimes very hard to discern between different parties. So we find in the Gemara that sometimes the description of the individual is used to differentiate them. So for instance, Yehuda Shinana. Rabbi Yehuda is called by Shmuel Shinana. So Rashi brings two explanations for that. One of them is Shinana is the sharp one, meaning that he was very bright, he was very erudite. The other one is Shinana, he had big teeth. And so that was a description of him. We also find by other times in the Gemara that somebody's a Zuta. Somebody is the smaller one, the younger one, the older one. Meaning that there are all these types of descriptions that are trying to differentiate the individuals by some sort of descriptive term about them. And so that could be the case here as well, which is that Yehuda Maccabi was that he had this feature, that he was a Makvan. His head, or he had a feature that looked something like a Makvan. That could be another possibility. But either way, it's interesting to note that some suggest that this Makvan here is the source for the Maccabim or Yehuda Maccabi. Alright. Roshu Shakut Milifanav Uskifat Me'achurav, or in back. Kida Amre Inche, like people say, Shakal Pisa. So that you take out a piece. So the Shakut is from in front, which Rashi says is his face is slanted on an angle in the front. Like a tool that's used by the carpenters that comes down on a slant in the front. I don't know if he's referencing to a plane, if he's referencing to a chisel of sort, but something that comes down on a slant in the front, the person's face is slanted downward. So that's the shakut from in front. Skifat is me'achurav. The top of his head is missing something from above. Like the common saying, shakal pisa, you took out a piece. I mean, it looks like somebody cut a chunk out of this person's head. That's the description of what we're speaking about. Skifat me'achurav. Rainu shakal pisa, it actually might be that that's a notrikon, that shkifat means shakal pisa. It's an acronym for shakal pisa. When you look at the back of the head, it looks like there's a chunk of his head missing. that might simulate the effect of a slant in the front. If you're missing a piece in the back, now you have a slant in the back as well. That might be why the Gemara prepares them together. It also could be from the word mashkof, also with the lintel. I don't know if that's a connection to this kifat over here. Tana, vitzavaro, shakut, vishamut. Another problem or mum is, if his neck is shakut or shamut. Shakut, dechavya machba, is a case where it's basically hidden, or the way that Rashi says it is, that his head is sitting between his shoulders. Now, always where your head is, it's between your shoulders, or hopefully it's between your shoulders, but it means that it's situated flat down on your shoulders. There's no neck there. It's as if you're missing a neck, and it's your head's literally sitting between your shoulders. And shamot is the arich v'shamut. It's a case where the neck is very long, and it looks like it's been detached from the body or detached from the shoulders. As the Rabbeinu Gershon says, darich tzavaro vidak ubolek partsufo harbe lachutz. It's a very narrow and long neck, and it's as if his face is sticking outwards or distended away from his shoulders. So either a very stumpy neck, which means that there's no neck there and it sits right on the shoulders, or a very, very long neck, which means it looks like it's extended or disconnected from the shoulders of the body. Balei chatarot, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. The balei chatarot, we spoke about a hunchback. The ik by etzem, if it has a bone there, kuleyame lo plige de pasla. Everybody agrees that that's problematic, meaning that if there's a bone that is protruding out of the back that has this person look, make him look like a hunchback or has some sort of a bone extension in the back, everybody agrees that's problematic. The machloket of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim as to whether he's kasher basulin or mishnah is a case where there's no bone there. Masavar ha'in shavev is a rosh al aron. One of them, meaning the Chachamim, believe that it is enu shavev is a rosh al aron, and therefore he's disqualified. He cannot serve. Masavar and Rabbi Yehuda believes karkora de bisra ba'almahu. It's just a piece of flesh or a piece of basar sticking out. It's not really a mum. It's just some excess basar, excess item that's sitting there, and that's not considered to be a davar shenu shaveh bizaro shalaro. Right? Hake reach pasul. So on the Mishnah, some of that is bald, is excluded. Amar Rava. Now Rava qualifies this and says, lo shanu, that's only true, ela she'en lo la'achurav. That's only if he doesn't have anything in the back. V'yeshlo lefanav. But he does have in the front. Aval yeshlo la'achurav kasher. But if he has in the back, then it is kasher. So now, the oddity is when you have hair in the front and you don't have hair in the back. So that's the type of kereach that's not normal. Balding usually happens from the front to the back or happens in the center. So over here, where you have balding all the way in the back and all over the center and then you just have hair in the front, that is something that's unusual and that's why it's problematic. But if you also have hair in the back, then it's kasher. And certainly if you have hair in the back and nothing in the front, that's also kasher. As Rashi says something interesting over here, says the tfei havinoi. It's more appealing when you're bald in the front and you have some hair in the back, rather than having a circle and having a hole in the middle. So Rashi has gradations of balding as to what is more appealing or what is considered to be a mum. So he says that the most appealing, if you're going to have a balding, is that you're missing all the hair in the front and the middle, and you have just in the back. That's the hair that you have, that's fine. The next level is if you have hair all the way around and just have balding in the middle. That's less appealing, not as pretty, but on the other hand, it's not something that would disqualify you. The last is where you have only hair in the front, nothing in the middle and the back. That's already a disqualifying factor because that's an oddity. It's not something that's a normal type of balding, and that's something that would exclude you from being able to do the avodah. Some put this qualification of Rova on the latter statement. We just did this on the first statement of the Mishnah, which is that if he is a kereach, he is pasul. And that kereach that is pasul, Rova defined for us is the hair in the front, nothing in the back. But if you have something in the back, you're kasher. If you just have in the back, then you're kasher. The next way is to have him qualify the second statement, which is, a kereach is pasul. And then, what is the problem with the kereach? Ko she'en lo shita shel se'ar mukefet v'ozen v'ozen. That's all if he doesn't have hair from ear to ear. In Yeshlo, if he does have it from ear to ear, kasher. Then he is kasher, and on that, Rava made his statement, which is, Yigma Yasefa, in Yeshlo, or is it kasher? If he has hair from ear to ear, it's kasher. Amar Rava, lo shanu, ela sheyeshlo la'acharav. That's only true if he has it from ear to ear behind, in the back of his head. Ve'ein lo lefanav, and he doesn't have any hair in the front. Amar Yeshlo, ben la'acharav, ben lefanav, pasul. But if he has it all the way around, then he is pasul. And certainly, in the case where he has it in front, or he doesn't have it in the back. And if he doesn't have it at all, that certainly he is pasul. And the nafka mina between them is if you have balding in the middle. They're both lishonot. Everybody agrees, if you just have a strip of hair in the back from ear to ear, that's fine, and that's totally qualified. Everybody agrees, if you have hair in the front and nothing in the back, that that's disqualified. The question is, when you have a hole in the middle, and you have hair all the way around, in the first lashon, Rava says that's fine. The only problem is, when you have it from ear to ear in the front, then that's problematic. If you have it all the way around, that's already good. That's in the first lashon. In the second lashon, he says it's only good when you have it ear to ear in the back. If it goes all the way around, it's already disqualified. So in the second lashon, balding in the middle would be disqualified. So the difference in the lashonot is whether the disqualification is only for hair that's in the front, not in the back. Is it also for hair that goes all the way around? And that's the difference. In the first lashon, that would be fine, the balding in the middle. In the second lashon, that would not be fine. You should just be aware that there is an alternate girsa for the first version of Rava's statement. You can see that note already in the Balei Tosafot, and it's brought in Note Vav of the Shita Mikubetzet, where he says that Rava's statement is that in the first scenario, even if you have hair all the way around, it would be problematic, which is very similar to the second statement, about Ein Lo Klal Kasher. If you have none at all, that would be fine, but Kol Shekein, and certainly in a case where you only have it on the back and not the front. And then the Nafka Mina between the Lishonot would be when you don't have anything there. Everything else would be the same as the second Lashon. There's a question when you have no hair of that at all. The second Lashon said that that was problematic, that was Pasul. Whereas this Lashon would say that if you have nothing there at all, it's the same as having it just in the back and it is Kasher. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Akar Chanim, balding, Vananasim, midgets, Vazavla Gyanim, eyes that are tearing all the time, that are exuding water all the time. Psulim. All of these individuals are psulim, lifish, einan, shaveb, is a rosh of their own. Because they are not something that is equal or something that is normal. So the question is, why did Rabbi Yochanan bring us these three items and tell us that they are psulim, lifish, einan, shaveb, is a rosh of their own? Karchanim, we already saw, tanina, it's a mishnah. Nanasim, tanina, we're going to see that in an upcoming mishnah. So the Gemara's answer is that Zavla Ganim Itzrikalei Leoshmeyunan. In Ochanami, Rabbi Yochanan didn't need to tell us about the Nanasim and the Karachanim. Just threw it in because he needs to tell us about the Zavla Ganim, which are not mentioned in the Mishnah. And then the Gemara says, maybe even for those two, we would also need Rabbi Yochanan, because Maudatema. I would have thought, Mishum Marat Ayin, that the problem for these items is Marat Ayin, the appearance, which is unappealing, and not a problem of Shalosh Aveb is a Rosh Al Arun. Problem is, Va'ako Echo Di'ika Mishum Marat Ayin, Mitnak Tani Lahu. Anywhere it is a problem Marat Ayin, the Mishnah specifically mentions that it's because of Marat Ayin. As the upcoming Mishnah is going to say, Vishnishu Rise'inav, the eyelashes of the individual fell out. Pasum Ibn Marat Ayin. And how are you then extrapolating it to other items that are mentioned in the Mishnah that don't have that terminology or have that description noted by them that they are a problem of Marat Ayin? If that's the case, then Karchanim and Nanasim that don't have that descriptor associated with them, they're clearly not a problem of Marat Ayin. Ma'udatema, I would have thought that Tani Chadav Odin Lekulu. It writes it over here by Shinishru Riseinav, but that's telling you that everything in the Perek, anything in the Mishnah that is mentioned from Balei Chatzodrot and onwards are also Marat Ayin, with the exception of the early Mumim that are mentioned in the Mishnah that are issues of Shalosh Aveb is a Rosh Al Arun. Rashi says the problem with that is Va'ako Echadika Midahar Umidna. Anytime that you see it is a problem of Marat Ayin, it repeats the fact that it's Marat Ayin. If you were right about that, then it should mention it once over here by Nishru we say enough, that should take care of the whole parak. The fact that in the Mishnah upcoming on Mem Daled Amud Aleph, It says she nishru shinav pasul mishum marat ayin. That's also a problem of marat ayin. That indicates that whenever it wants to tell you about it, it specifies and writes it again. So that means that it's not something you can extrapolate from nishru shinav to other items in the Mishnah. Ella alafuke mehay de tanya. Yochanan is coming to disagree with the following braita, where the braita says, Tanya kachanim vananasim vazav laganim ksherim. All of those items would have been okay in terms of their abode in the Mikdash. The only reason they're excluded is because of maratayin. They're unappealing to look at, and therefore they are precluded from avoda. And now Rabbi Yochanan comes along and says, he says the disqualification is fundamental. It's not just mipnei maratayin, because Adam Shaveb is the Rosh HaLarum. It says, man haitana, who's the author of this braita? Who's the view in that braita that says otherwise? Rabbi Yehuda, the tiny Rabbi Yehuda Omer, says a kohenim, the rabota karchanim, that they are considered to be sheirim midoraita. Rashi quotes Varchu bnei Aron kohenim from the beginning of Vayikra with regards to the korban olah. And Rashi says, apasuk ze matzitiya b'torat kohenim. When I looked in the Torah kohenim, when I looked in the Midrash Halacha on Vayikra, that's where I found this drasha. And the only reason that they're not Shirim is because of Maradayin, which would then accord with what we saw in the Braita. And Rabbi Yochanan's coming to say that he disagrees, that that's not the right reason as to why these are precluded. They're actually precluded because they are real mumim, that Sheinim Shaveb is a Rosh HaLarum. Right. Next Mishnah. Ein lo gvinim, o ein lo ela gavin echad, zeu gibein amur b'torah. So here we have a machloket as to what the meaning of the psul of gibein is in the Torah. So the Tana Kama here believes that means that if he doesn't have eyebrows, or if he only has one eyebrow, that's the gibein that the Torah is speaking about. That's the psul of gibein. Rabbi Doso Omer, shegvinim shochvim. It's a case where, as Rashi describes over here, the hairs of the eyebrows are so big that they fall down on his face. Maybe even cover his eyes. They're very long. Rabbi Chanina ben Antuginus Omer, Sheish lo shnei gavin ushtei shidraot. He sees the word gibein, not a reference to the eyebrow, but rather to the gav, to the back. And he says the gibein is someone who has two backs and two spinal columns. So that's the psul over here, or that's the mum that we're speaking about over here. Now the Rambam points out that everybody agrees that all these are psulim. They're just arguing about what the meaning of gibein in the Torah is. So it's not that they disagree fundamentally about the mumim, they just disagree about the definition of the word gibein in the Torah, and that's what they're describing here in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara says, v'gibein de'ein lo mashma? Does gibein make it sound like he doesn't have it at all? V'ravinu, gibein sheyesh lo gvinim harbe. The word gibein makes it sound like he has multiple gvinim, as Rashi says over here, gvinim harbe, this is what you were asking about. His two eyebrows connect together. There's no separation between them. So the braita seems to indicate that the word gibein comes to teach you about a unibrow, where it's a complete eyebrow that goes right across, and there's no separation between the two eyebrows. So that would be the gibein in the Torah. Now, in our Mishnah, it makes it sound like gibein, or the primary explanation of gibein is a lack of eyebrows. Ein lo gibeinim. O ein lo ela gavin echad minayin. When he doesn't have eyebrows, or he has one eyebrow, how do I know? Tamalomar o gibein. So the brightness seems to indicate we learned this out of o gibein, and our Mishnah seems to indicate that we learned that out of the word gibein itself. So Amaroba zeu midrash o gibein. Or in essence, he's saying that when the Mishnah says the word gibein, doesn't mean literally gibein, it means o gibein. So when it says over here, Zeu gibein amur betorah doesn't mean gibein. It means that's the drosha that we learn out of gibein from o gibein in the Torah, and that way we can reconcile between the Braita and the Mishnah and say they're both learning it out from o gibein. That the riboy that comes from o gibein in the Torah, that's what Rabbi Dosa is discussing or arguing about. Which is the Tana Kama subscribes to this drosha of o gibein. Rabbi Dosa does not subscribe to this drosha of o gibein. And therefore, he only has that one thing, which is gvinim shochvim, as being the problem in the Mishnah. Vidoso Omer, Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus, mentions the fact that he has two backs with two spinal columns, and that it's a mum. Lememra dechaye. So from here, it sounds like this person would survive. Vaitmar, the mapelet birya, a woman who miscarries some sort of fetus, sheish lo shnei gavin, ushtei shidrot, has two backs and two spinal columns. Ve'amarav, bisha eno vlad, by a woman that's not qualified as a fetus, as a birth, because that's not a viable entity. That's not the type of thing that would survive as a human being. Ubebeima, asur be'achila. And by animals, it would be asur be'achila. Rashi over here says, it's asur be'achila ki nevela. Denefel hu, it is a miscarried fetus. Vekamei tomi, and it's if it had already passed away. Lo mahani le shchita, therefore shchita is not effective on this animal. And Rashi says, the nature of the question, the Gemara Nida, is from our Mishnah, it sounds like it's a viable entity. That here it seems to imply that it's a mum by a behema, but that means that it's only disqualified for gvoa. It's not disqualified for a regular hedgerow to eat it. So it must be that it's a behema with a mum. That means that they are surviving, and that's the nature of the stira. Tosafot doesn't love that explanation of Rashi, because that implies that was maybe a fetus that's already left the mother. On the other hand, the Gemara Nida has a machloket Rav and Shmuel as to what the scenario is. And according to Rav, the scenario is where the animal's still in utero. And yet, despite that, the shechit of the mother won't help it out. Rashi over there in the Gemara Nida says that the question that we're asking here, or the steer we're asking from a Mishnah over there, applies both according to Rav and according to Shmuel. And if it's according to Rav, that means it's even in a scenario where it's still in utero. The Tosafot points out that Rashi's explanation is interesting because over here it's found by Mumei Adam, not by Mumei Behema, as Rashi claims in the Gemara Nida. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam believes that the question in the Gemara Nida is not on Rav and Shmuel, but only on Rav. And that is because Rav says that if a woman gives birth to it, it's not a viable vlad. Yet, from our Gemara over here, it sounds like it is viable because it's a psul adam. And a psul adam would only be relevant if the person was able to survive and have such a mum. And therefore, the question is uniquely associated with Rav, who makes the additional statement of that by an isha, it's not qualified to be considered a vlad, not just the statement by Behema, which Shmuel agrees to, that if it already exited the mother, that you can't be matirat al yidei shechita. But Rav makes the additional statement that by a woman, it's not considered to be a vlad for birth. And on that, we say, from our Mishnah, it sounds like it's a viable entity. Because otherwise, how can you have an adam with a mum if the person's not going to survive? So it must be that it's a person with a mum. That means that they are surviving, and that's the nature of the stira. And that answer is what the Gemara gives over here, which is Kvar Romani Ale Rav Shimi Bar Chiya, the Rav. Rav Shimi Bar Chiya there in the Gemara asked this question of Rav already. Vamarlei, and Rav responded to him, Shimiat? Is that you, Shimi, the big Talmud Chochom? You can't resolve this issue between this Mishnah and what I'm saying? Ella Mishishudrato Akuma. That the explanation over here is not what you thought, but rather when you're dealing with a Shidra, a spinal column that is bent over or that is hunched over. And that's what Rashi says over here, that when we say Shtei Gavin and Shtei Shidrot, it doesn't literally mean two backs and two spinal columns, but because the spinal column is bent over, it looks like somewhat like a hunchback that we mentioned before, that it looks like Shidrot Harbe. It looks as if the person has two backs or as if he has two spines because it's not a straight spine. Or the bent over shidra causes the problem because then it looks like multiple shidrot. But in that way, Rav separates between the din that we saw in the Gemara Nida, where it says that it is not a vlad, it doesn't survive, it's not qualified as anything, versus our Gemara, it seems to say it's just a mum. That's because over here, it's not literally two backs and two shidrot, versus the Gemara Nida, where it is literally that. That type of being will not survive. That type of being is not a viable entity. Here, we're dealing with someone that has one spine and one back, but it appears like two spines and two backs because they're so bent over. All right, next Mishnah. Charum pasul. Charum is problematic. Ezu charum. What is called a charum? Akuchel shteinav kachat. Somebody who can paint his eyes in one shot. Chol is the makeup that the women put on their eyes, like eyeshadow. If you can put on the eyeshadow from eye to eye without having a bridge of the nose in between, that's what a charum is. A charum is basically you're missing a bridge of the nose that sits between the eyes so that the depressions of the two eye sockets basically connect together because there's no intervening nose that's in between. Shtein av lamala, both eyes are up above. Shtein av lamata, or both eyes are down below. One's up, one's down. This is someone whose eyes are not coordinated. One of them looks up and one of them looks down at the same time. They're cross-eyed. So it seems to me that the previous statements are referencing to the location of the eyes or the eye sockets. And this is speaking about a case where the eyes or eye sockets are in place, but just that the eyes themselves are cross-eyed, meaning that one moves up and one moves down. They don't move in coordination. Sache Shemesh, Rashi quotes, and the Gemara will discuss it, someone who can't look at the sun, that his eyes are so sensitive, too sensitive to the light, he can't look at the sun. Ve'azagdan, ve'atziran. So these are, again, items that the Gemara is going to discuss. Vishnishru riseinav, or his eyelashes have fallen out. Pasul mipnei maradayin. That's a disqualification because of maradayin, meaning the appearance is something that's unappealing. And as we already noted in the previous Gemara, and Rashi notes it here as well, this mipnei maradayin is only going on that last line of the Mishnah of nishru riseinav. It's not referencing to anything else. It's just this particular item that it's referencing to. Tanravan and Charum, Shechotmo Shakua. Charum is that the nose is depressed. Chotmo Soler, Chotmo Boleim, Chotmo Notef. In all of these instances, they are problematic. Minayin, how do we know that's problematic? Tamalomar, O Charum. Similar to what we saw before about O Gibain, saying the same thing over here by O Charum. So those problems are, as Rashi says, Soleid, Shekatsar Beorko. He has a very short nose, pug nose, where it's very, very short, but it has to be unusual, to the point where it's something that is not proportionate to the face. And the opposite of that is notef. Notef means to drip down. And Rashi says over here, it's very long. It's an extremely long nose. Milamata misfato. It's so long that it goes below the lip line. So people have noses that are long, but this is so long that it goes below the lip line. And then boleim comes from the word blamim that we saw earlier, with regards to being a stima, something that's sealed up or closed up. That's what Rashi says, a nose that has its nostrils plugged up, that's the bolein. So is there also problems over here? How do I know these are all problems? It's called ocharum. So charum is the nose problem. There it's about a nose that is pressed inward, submerged in the face. And then these are ocharum, add on these additional problems with the nose. Rabbi Yossi Omer, in charum elokuchel shnei enav keachat. He says that charum is not like you're describing over here, a nose that is submerged in the face. Rather, it has to be so far in that there's no bridge, there's no protrusion, or there's nothing that blocks between the two eye sockets. Amrlo eflakta. You are exaggerating. You went too far. To be so submerged that there's no bridge of the nose intervening between the two eyes, that's a very extreme type of submergence. What the Gemara is saying is that that's far-fetched. Even without that, even if you have a submerged nose and a nose that's pressed in, that doesn't go as far as to being flat across the two eyes, that's still problematic and that's still a mum. And that what you described in the Mishnah, what we brought here in the Brayta in the name of Rabbi Yossi, is way too much. Even just the fact that it's mishuka, that it's submerged in some way, that's called charum, even if it's not as far as being flat across the two eyes. Okay, we'll stop here by the two dots on the top of Mem Daled Amud Aleph.